Those of us who've put down roots and held regular jobs for years can be forgiven for wondering from time to time what it might be like to live a more itinerant lifestyle. You know, travel from place to place, get a job for a little while in some town you've never seen before, and then off to the next place. There's certainly some romance attached to that life, but does that romance last? Today's guests can give us some idea. Jake Kaida is an author, poet, and traveler, and the author of the book Blue Collar Nomad. Welcome to you, Jake.
Nice to be here.
Matthew Tavis Johnson is with us as well. He's a pianist, composer, and the creator of a companion CD that goes with the book he now calls Southern Oregon Home. Hi, Matthew.
Hello. How's it going?
Good. Good to have you both here.
Thank you.
So,
Jake,
we can say fairly of you that you're all over the place in location and activities. Why?
I think it started at a young age. I was a runner, and I ran cross country, and I got to travel around. But then I played AAU basketball in New Jersey. And we were a fairly good team, so every summer we would make the national championships and get to travel all summer. And then I lifeguarded at different beaches along the Jersey Shore each summer. And then finally, me and my friends just took cross-country road trips, and it just stuck with me. And nobody else in my family is like that at all. They've all lived in New York City, New Jersey area. But once I got out to more wide-open spaces and saw all the different cultures and cuisines and music and just environmental areas, I just became very... addiction isn't the word, but just enamored, and it enabled wonder to kind of flow through me, and that's how I actually became a writer, through the traveling.
I mean, that's just what inspired the writing, is like you had to have an outlet for what you were learning along the way.
Definitely, that's exactly what it was. The writing came through the living, and I would say the rhythm of the living taught me how to write.
Do you have a fixed abode at this point? I mean, if people wanted to send you physical mail as opposed to email, where would you get it?
I mean, I have kind of a fixed abode, but I guess they could send it through the publisher. But I've been living more in the Southeast now. But I have to say, I do miss the Pacific Northwest. I spent a lot of time out here and up in British Columbia working. And so I think in the next year or so, I'll probably be moving back up into this area again.
You've been to 48 states, we hear, and several Canadian provinces. I guess the easier list is, which two states have you missed?
Hawaii and Alaska.
Oh, really? Okay.
It costs a lot of money to get out to Hawaii, so that's probably the biggest reason. And I was close to Alaska when I lived on an island up between British Columbia and mainland Canada called Cortez. I helped a family start an organic garden there for 2 years and kind of camped in an apple orchard while I did that. So that was the closest I got to Alaska.
How do you get around that? Can we assume that since you're not on planes much that you're probably just, are you hitchhiking a lot? Are you driving yourself?
I did a lot of road trips, trains. I gave up my driver's license for a couple of years. So I was totally dependent on, buses, trains, rides. You know, you can find rides on message boards and stuff, some hitchhiking as well. And just basically, I didn't own a car for many, many of these years as well. So, I had to find interesting ways to get places. Yeah.
Matthew Tavis Johnson, you have not been quite as much of a roamer, but you've gotten around. What is your story and trajectory?
I haven't done quite as much roaming as Jake has, but through playing piano and stuff, it's brought me, actually how we met was I was actually playing at a wedding over in France. That's the farthest I've traveled to play. But that's where I met his wife there, which was kind of a random story. And that's how he originally connected with me. But I've got to travel to Japan, Vietnam, do some international traveling. And also in the U.S. I played soccer for Oregon State. So I got to travel around to many different colleges and stuff, and would always be playing piano even at those places. So done a lot of traveling, mainly been performing Oregon, Washington, and California, just because it's, I guess, easier, and on the West Coast, a little easier to do the touring, that kind of thing.
Tell us about the music and the genre and all of that.
Okay. I just always, since I was young, I've always been writing, probably since about age 12. And the genre, I guess it would be new age, maybe kind of mixed with classical, somewhere in there.
Why don't we listen to some of this? We'll run up some of cut number one on the companion CD for Blue Collar Nomad.
Sounds good.
So you've got music in the family blood, I understand, Matthew.
Yeah, my dad, he lives up in Washington, and he's the same, actually, as I. He started playing at like churches and stuff even earlier than I was playing live. So I think it was when he was 10 or something, and now he's still doing the same thing and supporting himself just off playing piano, which is really cool. So whenever I go up to Washington, we're guaranteed to be playing at a church or a country club or something and doing a collaboration. And now that I'm getting older and getting more, you know, skillful at the piano, we just kind of improvise a lot and just have a lot of fun. But he can do pretty much every genre or every style of music really well. So he's also just a really good entertainer and fun to watch. Actually, he slams his foot down so often that he's gotten like several heel injuries from getting so into playing. So I'm not quite that intense, but yes.
So you followed your father's footsteps. If you had followed Jake in your father's footsteps in a career, what would you be doing?
Police chief.
Really? And where in New Jersey?
Yeah, in North Jersey. So he started and worked his way up, and after he got back from Vietnam, I think he worked at a couple auto dealerships, but then eventually became a cop and worked his way up. And my whole family's still in New Jersey, yeah.
All right, we'll learn more about our guests as we continue talking about Jake's book, Blue Collar Nomad, and Matthew's companion CD that goes with that. They'll also be appearing tonight at 7 o'clock at the Ashland Library, and we'll appear tomorrow at the same time at Grassroots Books and Music in Corvallis. Back on the Exchange with Jake Caeda and Matthew Tavis Johnson, and you in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about the book and companion CD, Blue Collar Nomad, with the two creators. Jake Caeda is author, poet, and traveler, also calls himself a spiritual pilgrim. We'll get into that in this next segment. He is the author of the book version. Matthew Tavis Johnson is a pianist and composer, and created the companion CD that goes with Blue Collar Nomad. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. You can send emails to jx@jeffnet.org, and also check out our Facebook page and see pictures of Jake and Matthew in the studio. Matthew couldn't bring a piano with him, but we did bring a CD, and we'll be checking that out, too, as we go on. So that's really funny, Jake, to think that your father, police chief, and you have picked a lifestyle that is just about as completely different from that as could possibly be.
Yeah, and it was interesting for my family, too. We're a very, I think, hardworking blue-collar family, which is where I got a lot of my positive work ethic and my traits, so that when I traveled, I could make a living. But it took them a really long time to get used to how I lived. But now we're really solid. But for a while, it was, you know, I think they worried a lot. You know, I think that was the main thing. My dad being a police chief, he knows what happens, especially where we grew up. But over time, we've come to an understanding that everybody has to live the way that they're passionate about and makes sense to them.
You were just telling a story about your dad visiting you in Maine while we were off the air. Would you care to repeat that for the rest of the folks?
Yeah, I worked as a waiter, a wine steward, assistant chef at a wonderful place up in Maine that had been on Penobscot Bay for like 150 years. And really quiet, no telephones, no TVs, no anything. Guests came up there just to experience the peace of the isolation. And my dad came up, and we were supposed to stay for 3 days and hang out. I was going to show him all these things. And the next morning, and he stayed in this beautiful room in the bed and breakfast part over the water of Penobscot Bay. It flows underneath. And he's like, oh, it's too quiet here. We got to leave, you know. And, you know, there's no sirens or anything. So it just, and for me, that place was kind of paradise. And I was so not wanting to leave, but I did a lot of seasonal jobs, and that was the way it was. You know, it really teaches you about unattachment. And that's kind of how why I call it my spiritual path, because you learn to become more unattached to things, yet to be very present with where you are.
I guess I'm a little surprised to find out that you are married.
Yeah, I am married, yeah.
And does your wife go with you everywhere, or does she just stay in the Southeast and check in with you when you show up?
No, I mean, I met my wife in Ashland, actually, which is amazing. So Ashland's a very, it's one of the most important places in my life. But no, I met my soulmate, and she's just a wonderful human being. And so, yeah, we traveled for the first 2.5 years we met. We worked on organic farms, and I had jobs as writer in residence at spiritual retreat centers, and she dances ballet and teaches Spanish and is very artistic, actually, and creative. So she would come with me and teach dance classes and just help me do catering, because I'm a chef too. So I would do like harvest dinners and organic dinners and teach people about organic food and farming. So no, she's very much symbiotic, totally symbiotic with me, and just the love of my life. So
Seems like somebody like you should have a reality TV show by now.
You know, I got asked to be the host of the Hippie Gourmet Show in San Francisco that roves around, because I used to be a chef at Hollyhock Retreat Center up in British Columbia, which is kind of like the Eslin Institute of Canada. And I got asked to be, but I didn't want to be labeled as anything. I think I like to be free to kind of go where I'm called to go. And that's an amazing freedom. And if you're going to get married while you do that, you have to be married to somebody who's spiritually and emotionally and psychologically understands that. And so my wife does. So,
all right. So some people might describe this as a wild hair, but you probably have a better definition for it than that. I mean, so what makes you decide when and where it's time to go?
Yeah. And I mean, again, that's why it really it's the underscore of the book is the literary reflections of a grassroots pilgrim. My life was very grassroots in that I was called to do environmental work. I taught a lot of at-risk youth during my time, worked on a lot of organic farms. I've just put my energy towards things that I believe in. And and a lot of that time has been volunteering. I spent 2 years not accepting paper money. I've done a lot of barter in my life. But I think too many people settle for jobs that they're totally uninspired by, and they just kind of check out. And I never wanted to do that. So I went where I was called, and I did, and I only supported organizations and people that I believed in what they were doing, and I thought it was good for the world and for the environment.
Jake Caeda and Matthew Tavis Johnson are guests on the Jefferson Exchange. Jake, the author, and Matthew, the composer, for a CD and book combination called Blue Collar Nomad. When and where did you start writing? I mean, is this something you've done all through school and ever since?
No, to be honest, I was a jock when I was growing up. And
you mentioned cross country and basketball.
And basketball, yeah. And my sister got a basketball scholarship to college. I played my freshman year in college. But, you know, when I was 19, I just met some really interesting people. And they started giving me books on, like, you know, Zen and Taoist philosophy. And I started juicing and eating organic food. Living in Newark, New Jersey, I had to drive an hour and a half to a Jamaican grocery store just to get, you know, organic food. And I don't know.
Talking about a food desert, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Newark. I mean, it's not. But I mean, yeah, we'd have, like, you know, herbal tea and discuss Asian philosophy while sitting up on our roof in Newark watching, you know, crime take place. So I don't know how it happened. Everybody just says at some point in my life, I just changed. And I think I changed into what was natural for me. And I had been living in an area that wasn't really me, and in a culture that wasn't really me. And when I got out into the world and started traveling and did some ceremonies with the Native Americans in the desert and just lived at some monasteries, I really found myself and who I am, and you know, haven't turned back.
Did you feel like you'd landed from another planet or something in the middle of northern New Jersey?
No, I mean, I liked growing up there, because the one thing about when you travel as much as I do is nobody can put anything past me because of where I grew up. I mean, you grow up in an area like that, everybody's kind of, you know. So I'm always thankful for that and for the work ethic and for growing up in such a diverse area. I mean, every culture, because I was only, you know, maybe 10 minutes from New York City, so I spent a lot of time in the city and in Greenwich Village as well. And so being around all the diverse cultures really made me a more accepting, open-minded person as well, which was great when I hit the road, because you do have to be kind of, you have to be very accepting and open to other cultures.
So you have, it looks like you've got two chapbooks and two books of poetry published in the United States and Canada. So stuff has been published of yours before.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I've had good luck with independent and alternative presses, and I've had a lot of stuff in journals and cultural magazines and a lot of independent alternative stuff, which is what I've always wanted to do. I like that kind of beat generation chapbooks and independent radical presses, getting out there doing tours like we're doing now, and getting out there and meeting people. I think, you know, a lot of big presses, you know, they won't send authors on trips, so they don't go, and they just rely on the internet for sales and everything else. But I like reading and meeting people.
Which, come to think of it, we haven't heard from the book yet. We have heard some of Matthew's music. Do you have something you'd like to read from Blue Collar Nomad?
I do. And you know, this is a piece. Ashland's a very special place for me in Southern Oregon and Northern California in general. And this is the first time I ever happened upon Ashland, and so this is an excerpt from a larger piece about Southern Oregon, but I'll just read the smaller excerpt. The bus from Salem to Medford was packed with people going down to San Francisco and Los Angeles. When we stopped for a short break in the college town of Eugene, the bus station was filled with drifters, young kids with bandanas and rucksacks and older guys with thermoses of booze and stained flannel shirts stashed in Goodwill duffels. I was drifting as well, so I boarded the bus, settled in, sat back, looked out the window, and listened to the banter. What stories we drifters can tell. There was no need for my headphones on this leg of the trip, as I had all the entertainment I needed. There was one kid out of all the crazy passengers on the bus that will always stick with me. He was a big, tall kid that kind of resembled the character of Chief from the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, a slow-witted, honest, forthright soul who would never hurt a fly. He kept telling me that his mother, who was a very spiritual Native American woman, had sent him on this trip that had originated all the way up in Spokane, Washington, and would eventually end near Flagstaff, Arizona, where his grandmother lived. His mother believed that his life force was being sucked out of him up in Spokane, and that the mountains outside of Flagstaff, where she had been raised, would re-energize him and usher him towards manhood and his true destiny in the world. The bus pulled into Medford at a little after 9 o'clock at night. I walked off the streamlined silver vessel and grabbed my rucksack from the underneath compartment. Then I looked out into the street and was about to sit down against an old brick building and ponder my situation in the fresh moonlight when a very pretty young girl asked me, "Well, what are you going to do now?" "Are you talking to me?" I asked her. "You're the one looking quite perplexed with what to do next," she replied. Not only was this girl attractive, she was intelligent and had a sarcastic sense of humor. As a Jersey boy, I appreciated that. "I hadn't figured that out yet," I answered. "Well," she replied, "I came here to collect my sister, and now I am heading to Ashland. Would you like to go there?" "Ashland?" My friend Michael Murphy had told me that he had once come across this town on a trip up to Seattle from San Francisco. I thought to myself for a second, and then proclaimed, "Yeah, I'd like to go to Ashland." The girl drove an old, beat-up, small blue car that had stuffing spilling out of the front seats and no seatbelts. However, it was a ride, so I sat back and enjoyed it. The girl driving was the older sister of the girl riding in the back. The girl driving lived in Ashland. The girl riding in the back had just moved here from the mountains of Tennessee to live with her big sister. Where were their parents? Who knows? They were here, giving me a lift.
Jay Kaieda reading from his book, Blue Collar Nomad. He calls himself an author, poet, traveler. There's so much more. Matthew Tavis Johnson with us as well, pianist and composer. He composed the music for the companion CD that comes with Blue Collar Nomad. They will both be at the Ashland Library at 7 o'clock tonight, and you can talk to them now on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. You can send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. And, of course, you can check us out on Facebook and see the picture that we shot of Jake and Matthew at the top of the hour. Here is Julie in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jake and Matthew. Julie, you there? Julie in Ashland. Going once, going twice. No Julie in Ashland. Darn it. And here we have our headphones on. All dressed up and no place to go. All right, so this was your first trip to Ashland, then, that you just recounted to us.
Yeah, and that took place in, I believe it was 2003. And it was just, yeah, it was wonderful. And I ended up staying in a teepee at Jackson Wellsprings for about 9 or 10 days in the fall. I had been working in San Francisco, and I just wanted to experience the fall. And so I came up, and it was late October, and lit a campfire in the teepee every night and just kind of wandered around, met a lot of people, kind of hitchhiked into the town from Jackson Wellsprings and just fell in love with the place. And then it would come up, you know, once a year, and then eventually I found work here, and so I've been coming back here on and off for a long time.
Matthew, you had mentioned that you first met Jake's wife at a wedding in France. Is that right?
Yeah, actually.
Of all the strange places to make a connection. And when did you finally meet Jake?
The first time that we met was actually, again, it was here. I think he had flown over from Florida, I believe, and he was visiting because his wife's family lives in the area somewhere around here. And that was actually, we had been working together, though, on just through email and phone calls and stuff for 2 years previous. So it was definitely a big build up to the meet. But we met down at actually where we're performing tonight, down at the library. And we're just going over, you know, going over the songs and this and that. And things have definitely like changed a lot since the beginning, but definitely for the better. But and we've only actually met twice in person. The second time we just got done with a little tour down in the beginning of our tour, you should say, down in San Francisco. So that was the second. So we were really going on the fly as we were performing about 4 hours after we had met. But I think one thing that we really like about each other, too, is that we're both really spontaneous and kind of good at our craft. And so doing the shows, it just felt like we had already practiced for a really long time. And it just, you know, would flow really well. And even if you would put me on the spot to, like, try to come up with something I'd never done before, just seem like very, you know, very natural to do, I guess. So
let's grab another track off of the CD. This is track number 4 called The Defector on the Blue Collar Nomad CD. Let's listen for just a bit. So as you prepared the project, I mean, how did you work together on this? I mean, Jake, did you say to Matthew, how about a cut dealing with this chapter or something like that? I mean, how did you divide the duties up and figure out how best to get the music to complement the book?
Yeah, well, my thing is that music is the biggest part of my writing besides traveling, right? And so I had offers from some independent and alternative pressers to publish the book, but I didn't have any offers to publish the book with the CD. So eventually when I found a publisher who was interested, I sent Matthew basically the manuscript, so it wasn't edited yet. And the original manuscript was about half poems and half stories. And now it's become almost all stories, but there's a lot of poems mixed into all of my stories because originally I'm a poet. And so basically I just said go with it, you know, because I love collaborating. I actually collaborated on an album with a very famous jazz pianist named Eddie Higgins, who has since passed, but he's a very famous pianist out of Chicago. And we did everything spontaneously. And so I said to Matthew, I don't want to tell you how to interpret my work. Just go with it and really feel what you feel. And so he came up with a lot of compositions, but we narrowed it down eventually after 3 years to 14 compositions.
And then, does he show you words and you think of, okay, well, they're not going to actually be sung here except on one cut, I guess.
I mean, that was basically it. I just read through the entire book and then went back and just reading each piece, which it was really neat because I've done a lot of just solo piano projects, but the one I was so intrigued by this one because it's something like I've never done before, where it's making me, I guess, like making me challenge myself in a way that I never had. Because I don't think if Jake didn't come along, I probably would have never thought to write a song with, you know, like reading something and seeing its effect on how it makes me feel, and then writing a composition based solely on that. And so, like, that part of it was really intriguing. So that's what I would do. I'd read it, and if it was, you know, however it was making me feel, I'd just see what would come out, basically, and that, then I would send it to him, see if he felt like it was really, you know, if it captured what he was originally kind of feeling as well. And a lot of times it would, and sometimes, you know, it wasn't quite right, but yeah.
But let me understand, you guys were never together in the same room while you were either writing the book or you were composing the music.
Oh, no, it's, yeah, totally separate, yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, no, a lot of these writings have, like, it's from 1998 to 2010, so most of the individual pieces have been published in journals and stuff, but this is the first time they've ever been collected, and we were not in the same room. And, you know, that's why I think it took 3 years, because he has other projects, I have other writing projects, and move around a lot, so, but I think it came out amazing, you know, so.
Well, you were speaking about journals, and I read some of your blog stuff online. In particular, I read the Key West blog, mm-hmm. about you and a friend walking down the street with this semi-drunk woman. You really meld easily, it seems like, into social situations that would probably scare the daylights out of some people.
Yeah, I've been in a lot of interesting situations, and I've never, and I mean, people say knock on wood, so you have a wooden table here, but I don't know, I think it has a lot to do with the energy that you carry yourself with and how you walk through the world, and I think people, especially people that are misplaced or forgotten by mainstream society, are the people that I've bonded with over my life, and I think they see in me an authentic, I'm really open to their story and who they are at that moment of their lives without judging them. And being with them, and these people have taught me amazing things in my life, but many people will just look past them, overlook them, or not even see them. And I think when you really look at someone and you see them and you give them the opportunity to share with you in an authentic way, it's amazing how they do when you. But it takes a lot of being able to just be present with them. That's why I do think I was a pilgrim because it is my spiritual path, the movement and the openness.
Is there some end point in the sense of, you're looking for X, and when you find X, your spiritual path will be complete?
No. And I mean, I think that's the thing. I've never been looking for anything in particular, but I've been open to what's there. And I would say the Tao Te Ching too would say, you know, it's about flowing with the river, and you really can never get out of the river, but a lot of people don't know that they're in it. But I think when you're in the river and it's taking you on the way to the sea, you realize it's all the same thing.
Back on the Jefferson Exchange, more with Jake Caeda and Matthew Tavis Johnson talking about their joint project, Blue Collar Nomad. Jake did the book, Matthew did the CD, with obviously some discussions in between via email, it seems, and phone as well. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange with our guests, and take your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us. Maybe you have some travel stories of your own you'd like to impart. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Jake and Matthew and you in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today to the creators of the Blue Collar Nomad Project. Blue Collar Nomad, the book, comes from the hands of Jake Caeda, author, poet, and traveler. He really has been in all lower 48 states and quite a few Canadian provinces as well, moving from place to place, working job to job. Matthew Tavis Johnson is a pianist and composer, more Oregon-centric, and wrote the music that, or composed the music that comes with the CD that comes with the book, Blue Collar Nomad. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Maybe you have a tale to tell about your own time traveling around the country and meeting interesting people. Email address jx@jeffnet.org, or check us out on Facebook and you'll see a picture of our two guests here. We just talked about there not being an end point, in the sense of there's no one thing you're looking for that will complete your journey. But when you call yourself a spiritual pilgrim, are you looking to get things from people, from places, from both?
Yeah, I would say definitely both. I think one of the things is in the world with all the technology and all of the just distractions, I think that people have forgotten that place has its own energy, its own personality. And the more that you can allow yourself to sink into the story of the place that you're in, the more that it can tell you about itself. And those are I try to allow the place to tell me about itself and then the people in those places. The wonderful, amazing thing is the symbiotic relationship between traveler and local. If there were no locals, traveling would not be what it is, right? Travelers bring this fresh energy to a local place, but the locals bring a grounded energy to the traveler. And it's a beautiful, wonderful relationship that you have together. And then when you add the backdrop of the place into that, you have a very fulfilling holistic, engaging process.
You know, I was really struck by the again. You read your blog about spending some time in Key West and your observations about how travelers will change a place, tourists in particular, when a place becomes tourist heavy. And it made me think about my own observations about New Orleans, where the very things that people want to go see there are things that have been changed by their presence. You know, the places that used to be working businesses around Jackson Square have now been changed into shops that sell shot glasses and T-shirts and things like that. So obviously each one does change, has the potential to change each other. And I think you made the same observation about Key West, that there's like a tourist place where you're supposed to hang out. And the people were saying, oh, make sure you stay there because otherwise you're off with an element you don't want to be around.
Right.
And you were getting this from the police, weren't you?
Yeah. And that's an excellent point, actually. Yeah, Key West is very much like that. So we were hanging out in the more Caribbean, which people there would probably call Caribbean shanty towns or ghettos, but what was very much characteristic of Key West. And my point was, yeah, you'd have these fanciful writers who will go down to Key West, but they won't actually. The Key West that they're in is almost like a Disney World. And the Key West that I was in was a totally different Key West than that. And I'm not saying that the Key West that I was in is the true Key West. It's a different side of Key West that most people will never experience. And that's why I want to relate that experience to let people know there is another side to this place other than the touristy aspect of Duval Street.
As Matthew, have you read some of Jake's stuff? Have you ever been inspired to take on some of the kind of traveling he does? You much happier with your own slightly more rooted lifestyle?
Well, no, I think it's definitely inspiring, a lot of his readings, because like you're saying, he's basically connecting with people that most people would overlook and showing like how interesting that is. And it's been, really fun, even starting just from San Francisco, to see his perspective on how he just views traveling and views places, because it's a way that most people would normally never think about. And so it's kind of opening my mind. And because traveling, it can be like a scary thing. You have to be brave, especially the way he's doing it. And so, but it, you know, if you just kind of give yourself to it, it seems like pretty much anybody can do it. Just don't be afraid. Go out and know, you know, good things are going to happen and there's going to be challenges, but those are things that you can be afraid of them or just kind of look forward to them and know you can, you know, overcome them no matter what. So, it's been inspiring though. Yeah.
Jake, when you arrive in a town, I mean, do you think in terms of like, oh, I'm going to look for a job or I'm going to look for a person to talk to, I'm going to look for a sandwich, or, I mean, do you set
three,
a priority
yeah.
list?
Yeah. You know, I think especially from 1998 to 2010, when I was more traveling by myself during that time, it was one of the first things I always did. I either went to a place because of a job, and again, these are seasonal jobs or jobs working on farms or teaching at-risk youth, or when I went to a town, I'd go to the co-op or the library and put a sign up saying these are the jobs that I've done, these are the places that I've worked. And sometimes people would email people and call people at restaurants I had worked at. And the thing is that, yeah, I got to build up a great resume where I had worked all over the place. So bartending, chef, you know, organic farms, gardening, landscape artist, mentor to at-risk youth. But it was, and why I say blue-collar nomad is because it was about the work. If I wasn't willing to work and pick blueberries for 8 hours a day and, or do this or do that, I wouldn't have been able to travel because I just don't have that kind of money.
Your actual last name is adopted from your travels, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So I go by Jake, which is a family nickname, and Kaida, which was given to me by an organic farmer in California, an older Japanese man. And the word Kaida in Japanese means little dragon.
And you have some other poems, I understand, in the pile there. Can we hear the one about the Rogue River?
Yeah, so this is called We Are Rivers Flowing Into the Sea, and I wrote it for my wife while I was sitting next to the Rogue River after we first met. We were not married at that time, but I met her in Ashland, but then I went up to Grants Pass, and I was sitting by the Rogue River. Rivers run, coursing their way through towns, valleys, and across vast meandering lands that feed our imaginations with grains and music. Our human lives diverge, crisscross, and from time to time interconnect, pouring out in medicinal harmony inside these indigenous tributaries of the unspoiled heart. Within this native union of body and water, love is the aqueduct where our spirits gather to funnel and gush. Thunder and lightning the organic highlights of mystical embrace, revealing signs of lovers who ascended as one.
That's Jake Kaida reading from his collection of poems, that one about the Rogue River. And of course, the book is called Blue Collar Nomad. There's a companion CD created by Matthew Tavis Johnson. Writing training, did you get much over the years? I mean, did you go through English courses and did you get much college?
I did, but I would have to say that my writing comes from really the rhythm of travel and listening to music, especially jazz. I did get to be friends with a number of the old school beat poets through my travels and being in San Francisco, and had a couple of mentors, and a mentor early on was Joseph Langlin, who's not a beat poet. He used to teach at UMass Amherst, an amazing poet. But yeah, I got to meet a lot of people and who helped me over the years. And I would just say listening to the speech patterns of locals in different places too really helped me a lot. And that's, I think Kerouac did that as well too at a high level, really listening to how people talked in different places so he could catch that in his prose.
Now, as far as music training goes, Matthew, you grew up with a father who was musical, and you went to Oregon State University, I see, but didn't graduate with a music degree.
No, actually, I didn't. And I was actually I was separated pretty early from my dad when I was like 4, I think. And so, but it was funny because they never had to tell me to go play the piano, or I never had any formal training at all. Just was self-taught and kind of would just, you know, first doing one key at a time when I was about 4 years old, and then all the way up to now. And I don't know, I just always wanted to play for some reason. And in college, though, actually, even though I've played and performed so much, when I was younger anyway, I had a fear of being in front of people and doing public speaking. And so my college major was actually communication, because I really wanted to do, I knew I wanted to perform for my entire life and be good at talking in front of people, that kind of thing. And so that was actually originally why I chose communication in college, just more for the public speaking, because I thought I had the music down already. I like classical music and I can read music, but I'm more, like we were saying earlier, a little bit more spontaneous, where if I hear a song, then I can just play it right away. And so playing by ear, I guess, is much more fulfilling for me if I'm going to play somebody else's piece. But it's worked out, though, in the long run. So,
Before we listen to cut number 5 off the Blue Collar Nomad CD, Upstairs at the Van Dyke, can you set us up what it's about?
Yeah, this one was actually, it was, I believe it was, the story took place in Florida, and he was upstairs where it was kind of after, or during the, there was a pianist playing just something in the background with cigars in the ashtrays, and yeah, Jake is the one, he can really set up the scene a little better than I could. But
yeah, I had worked the season as a bartender at the Van Dyke, which is a very famous jazz club, and that's where I met Eddie Higgins, and he was playing the piano. And this story is about how South Beach was kind of really hard for me to live in because it's a very egotistical place, but how this jazz lounge became my spiritual home while I was there because the musicians would take me off into these beautiful landscapes.
Let's listen to a little bit of Upstairs at the Van Dyke. Having two people in a creative process can be tricky, you know, the Lennon-McCartney thing, obviously, and tensions can arise. So, I mean, particularly since you guys are working so far apart physically via email and phone, was there ever, like, Jake saying, no, that's not what I had in mind? It's okay, you can tell us.
Yeah, no, not so. I mean, he wouldn't, I guess, approach it like that. Some things, yeah, if they didn't fit right, then you'd just let me know, like, think more in this way or I don't know. I guess it depends on the poem or story too, but most of the time it actually worked out well where he liked it. I just had written originally like 54 songs and we knew we had to get it down to 13, and so it made it easy basically to choose, or I shouldn't say it made it easy, but you know, basically we knew we had to get the top 13-14 songs, and some of them just stuck out more that even it just seemed that they fit the best, I guess. And so that's kind of how but yeah, he didn't have a lot of, you know, he didn't criticize me or anything. He was always supportive of what I was trying to go for anyway. So
we have a call on the line for you from Richard in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jake Caid and Matthew Tavis Johnson, the creators of Blue Collar Nomad.
Hi, Jeff and Matthew and Jake.
Hey, Richard.
I'm a musician from White Plains, New York, and living in Eugene for 40 years. And I want to come up and see you guys. Are you going to be in Corvallis?
We are. We're going to be at Grassroots Books and Music in Corvallis at 7 p.m. tomorrow night.
Oh, that sounds great.
Awesome.
I have so much to talk about. You guys are the best thing since sliced bread.
We haven't heard that one. That's awesome.
Thank you, sir.
I mean, you guys are just great. I love it. I can't wait to see you.
All right, Richard. All right. Thanks for the call.
Appreciate you tomorrow, Richard.
All right, and the other appearance, of course, is tonight at 7 o'clock at the Ashland Library. How much ground are you guys covering on this tour?
Well, it started in San Francisco, so we did all different shows in the Bay Area. Now we're in Ashland, then Corvallis, then a show in Portland at the Rialto, and then third place books in Seattle. And, you know, this one is special because Ashland is a special place for both of us. This was the first time we ever met each other, was at the Ashland Public Library. So that's really cool. And I just want to say one thing. So if you come out tonight to see us at Ashland or Grassroots, but if you don't get to come out, I'm a big supporter of alternative and independent presses. So you can always order the book and the CD from www.nomadicdevotionbooks.com, which put it out and in a very authentic way. So remember that independent presses need you to support them, just like public radio stations do, because they're trying to put out authentic and interesting material into the world in a non-corporate way.
And we do have links, obviously, on our website and at our Facebook page to nomadicdevotionbooks.com to link up to the whole Blue Collar Nomad project. You talked about the kinds of jobs you do. I mean, is there ever any advanced planning? I mean, you just take off in a direction, see where your feet take you? Is it that loosey-goosey, or is it a little more planned than that?
It's like jazz. It's, you know, how jazz is structured, and then it goes off into formlessness, and when they do solos and they come back down into form. I think that's how my travels are. It's not so... You got to have a lot of discipline to do this, you know, and I learned that discipline from my parents. And so, no, there was form to the formlessness, you know? Yeah, exactly.
Do people say to you, I imagine fairly often, boy, I wish I could do what you're doing. I just feel like I'm so stuck here where I am. By the same token, do you say back to them, you know, sometimes I really wish I could stay in one place for a year at a time?
Yeah, both. I mean, and I have, but, you know, I've worked at some wonderful places and really put my soul into it, but I never owned anything. So sometimes I would get a place to a point where, like the one organic farm in Canada, and we sold pizzas and ice cream. And then once I got it to a point where it was really working, the woman, who's still a friend of mine, decided she wanted to sell it. And I was going to, you know, make that my home. So you do. You have to remain unattached. You have to be present, and you have to give your all to the place, but you have to remain unattached. And for people who tell me they want to live like that, I say it sounds more romantic than it is, because there's a lot of times where you're in a place and you can't find a job, and you don't have money, and you're staying in a flop house, or, you know, sometimes I slept in park benches or whatever. So you really have to be dedicated, and I think the fact that it was my spiritual path made it easier.
The book is called Blue Collar Nomad. There is a companion CD. The author of the book, Jake Kaida, the composer of the music and the piano player as well, Matthew Tavis Johnson, and they'll be at the Ashland Library at 7 o'clock tonight at Grassroots Books and Music in Corvallis at 7 o'clock on Tuesday night. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Oh, thank you so much for having us.
Appreciate you having us. Take care.
And that'll do it for today's Exchange. You can find out more about the program and subjects and suggest a guest at jeffexchange.org. We provide show topics and recordings and pictures on our Facebook page. The same links are available on Twitter at Jeff Exchange. If you're listening in the morning, the takeaway is coming up next. Our evening rebroadcast is followed by news from the BBC. The Exchange is produced by Charlotte Dern of JPR News, also at the controls today. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time on the Jefferson Exchange. And please, have a great day.